This is David Greenhalgh, take two. Jump straight in.
We then left our layout position and with the hope, of course, of arriving at Limbang at daylight. This wasn't quite to be the case. We were perhaps a little late, owing perhaps also to the inexperience of the midshipmen who were in charge of the actual boats themselves. But we also found that on arrival, and not quite expecting the surprise we got, that it wasn't quite so easy to drift into the bank as the plan and the briefing told us, because they had some advance warning, either lookouts down the river expecting us or whatever, I really don't know. But then firing started on the forward of the two boats. As we came round the bend to go in towards the landing points, which had been predetermined. So with this in mind, the leading boat decided to go full ahead and beach and get the Marines ashore, because of course by this stage we hadn't got a clue what was happening. And then the weight, or the full weight, of the return fire, well, we shouldn't say return fire because we hadn't opened up at this stage, but the full weight of fire from the bank coming towards us sort of threw our plans into disarray, and it was suddenly decided by the commanders that the leading boat would go in and land the troops ashore, and then the rear boat would give them as acute a cover from the Vickers machine guns as was possible by strafing the actual village itself overhead height, with the hope of sort of frightening people to lay down their arms and offer no resistance. So from our boat itself, so having all surprise being lost, from my position, which was keeping my head down as low as possible under these 1 foot or 18 inch gunwales, and really blessing the fact that we had these agricultural implements behind me, sort of shielding me from the back, was the confusion, presumably communication between the two boats, but it obviously had been decided, and I saw the front boat going hell for leather into the bank to load, to offload the Marines. We then got from our commander, which was our troop commander, a guy called Soapy Waters, so called because he had short cut blonde hair, was that we were going to follow them as soon as that boat had cleared, and that the original plan was to be aborted and we would assist them and give them as much cover as possible. From where I was edgingly now and again, when appeared the fire wasn't coming directly at me, to look over, it just, as was given to us in the briefing, a three-sided square village, but there appeared to be houses off to the right and going up towards the top of the river, and this is where it appeared the bulk of the firing was coming from, which included a light machine gun, I might add, at this time, which was quite frightening. Never had one fired at me before. And then one or two people on our boat started getting hit, and in fact a friend of mine beside me, a guy called Scouse Kierens, most unlucky guy to recall, got hit in the neck, and also our commander, Soapy Waters, got hit, who was up in the driving seat, you might add, of the landing craft, and he was shouting a bit, and the midshipman in charge of the boat was calling for the next Marine commander. I mentioned my sergeant major earlier, and of course he should really have been the next Marine commander, but I think he was fighting with the troop sergeant at the time to get their heads as much as they possibly could under the tractors, so there seemed to be a little bit of confusion there as well. However, without any further ado, the MIDI then said to us, right, number two craft, I'm beaching you, stand by to land. There was a lot of fire coming directly at us, not very accurate, but it was certainly enough to sort of frighten us, and with that we put into the bank. Meanwhile, I could see upstream that the leading boat had landed and all the troops had disembarked.
Can I stop you a second?
Whilst this was going on, the midshipman in charge of our boat had pulled us away from the main bank to put us, or attempt to put us out of range a little, from the actual town itself, and then from where we were. And also as we landed, I think one guy from our boat got hit, too badly, but he was hit as we got ashore. And we took cover as and where we could, allowing for that the preceding crew from the leading boat had got in and around the police station. That's where we stopped to try and take account of what was going on and who was where and what had happened. Apparently, as I passed, I noticed that the guy up the tree who had been firing the light machine gun at us had been killed and was sort of obviously no longer performing. Also on landed, I felt heat in my boot for some reason. I paid no particular attention to this until much later in the day and realised I'd pick up a couple of shotgun bullets or pellets in my ankle. Luckily for the boots and the putties we were wearing had obviously given as much protection as possible. And really it was a case then of picking ourselves up, finding out who was where, and re-planning a new course of action. I myself was detailed with my particular troop to skirt the would-be... Our troop was then dispatched to skirt up. Remembering our initial course or briefing was to come in on the bottom of the town, was to maintain or attempt to reach this area now and to cut off anybody who was attempting to escape and work our way through the actual village. We got up by a temple, I think it was a temple area, and once again we encountered a little bit of opposition coming from the actual houses and housing area. So we adopted the normal sort of pepper pot movement, which is some protect whilst others move, and got ourselves into position to give support for people, which obviously was going to be then a house clearing job. And so we attempted to enter the first property of the three-sided square. There was a guy we obviously killed, not me personally, but my section killed, lying outside of the door. So we assumed on arrival at it that it was empty, or open rather, but in fact it wasn't. There is humour in uniform and humour at most things. I think it was complete contents of one magazine that was emptied into the door to try and sort of effect an entrance where the normal lock would be, only to find that the door had been bolted top and bottom, and of course in the heat and the adrenaline running of the moment, and hadn't even been considered. So after the contents of one magazine, and I think it was one grenade as well, we effected or eventually effected an entrance as we done one house, two houses, three houses. But it does take quite an amount of time. Interspersed with this searching method, my defence party, in other words cover group, with their automatic weapons which have been covering us, are also on a high, if you like, with adrenaline running, and they, whilst communications still exist and they are fully in the picture about what's happening on our progress, there is a no man's land area where people shouldn't be, and if people do appear, then there was in fact sporadic firing from them, possibly with no return, I'm not aware. So this stopped your progress through the house, because any time you hear firing, of course you stopped. There was also tasks of collecting up, during the course of the day, having to dispatch people to collect up dead bodies, and it had been decided where these dead bodies were going to be disposed, an onerous task. But once again, an experience for young Marines who perhaps never seen dead bodies before. But once again, there is a norm in everything, and towards the end of the day, it just became a particular task.
What about your own dead and wounded? That must have been a bit of a shock for you.
After the initial landing, we never saw them. They had obviously been taken care of. As far as our own dead and wounded, we never saw them. And this is always the case. We carry with us a medical attendant who looks after them. If he can achieve anything in the way of first aid, then that is carried out. But we don't stop, unfortunately, or fortunately, whichever way you look at it, it's a fact of life. The aim, of course, in all warfare is to injure, because then it would takes people to look after the injured. If they are dead, then you don't worry too much about them. But the normal case is to injure them, and then you tie up two or three more people of the actual forces. But in our instance, the fact is, if they drop, it's the most unfortunate. But you carry on until the task is completed, and then you go back and look after them.
So just wind us down from that.
It took us, the whole company, and we heard via the communication network that in fact the residents had been, or their release had been affected, and they were quite well and in good spirits. But it would appear that the bulk of the terrorists, which we had been sent up there to put down, had escaped to the west, out of the top of the town, whilst we were attempting to get ashore. I'm not saying that had our plans, initial plan and briefing succeeded, that it would have reduced the revolt by any number of months, but at least it would have captured perhaps one or two more people of the terrorists that we were chasing. So having cleared the village by virtually the end of that day, it was just a mopping up process, sending out scouting patrols into the hills and the jungle adjacent to the actual town. And so the actual thing broadened from there, and we arrived eventually down at the Temburong River, which is the river adjacent to the one we came up on, in jungle warfare at that stage, attempting to sort of identify the whereabouts of all the terrorists. We came across their headquarters, and it was quite funny because it was my section that thought they were indeed very, very rich. We dug up a container which appeared to contain millions and millions of banknotes. And we eventually found out that the Tonku, or the terrorists, had they sort of been successful, were going to flood Malaysia, I think it was at that stage, with Japanese occupation money, and that's what we had found.
Well, I want to go back over that now.
There are many changes in mood. There is a standard fear which subsides as...
Can you actually say,
I remember well being frightened initially, but then as adrenaline flowed and one is given an order to do something, i.e. land, elation starts and you're on a particular high. But then that goes and it becomes a job, and your training, or my training certainly, comes and takes over, and you react like an automaton, but certainly as a second nature of doing things, and it suddenly comes flooding back into you, so that if somebody is firing at you and you are down crawling and observing, you are certainly doing it perfection. I felt no feeling of elation when on passing a dead enemy, or indeed injured enemy, perhaps sympathetic. And I think possibly, going looking ahead, the utter waste of it, for no apparent reason. Obviously I felt great sympathy for personal colleagues who I knew had been indeed injured or indeed killed.
Stop you there a second, because
In terms of our own casualties, with perhaps a numbers landing of, I don't know, about 120, we had 5 dead and quite a number of injuries. In percentage basis, that is quite high. On a later attack, or in fact a later major battle, my whole unit, in fact, never encountered 5 fatalities, and that was on a pretty major outfit. So this, by and large, and in percentage, in perspective, was quite heavy casualties for us. I think it was primarily that we were not expecting it. Our information and intelligence could have been a lot better, and had we been ready for an all-out, then we would have been perhaps a little better off. As far as the event was concerned, I never experienced...
Can you say the attack on Limbang?
All right. As far as the attack on Limbang is concerned, in respect to my career, I never encountered the feelings or emotions or indeed the actual attack pattern until much later in life, which was in the actual Falklands itself. As far as my company, Lima Company or L Company of 4-2 Commando, they were then, for quite a considerable time afterwards, referred to as Limbang Company because it was considered a major achievement as far as the 4-2 Commando was concerned.
And I'm going to make one more point. Turning point.
As far as the strategy is concerned, I think it was perhaps the only frontal attack which the Royal Marines had put in for some considerable time, or indeed thereafter, certainly in my service career. And of course, with the success of it, we continue to celebrate Limbang Day, now every 10 years.
Every 10 years or every year?
Every 10 years now.
Oh!
Because in memory of that particular attack, it is certainly remembered and celebrated, or was every year, up until the Falklands incident 20 years later in 1982, and the annual celebration has now sort of been replaced by the Mount Kent Day, which 4-2 Commando celebrate. But there was a plaque with all the people who got killed on that particular attack put up on the shore of Limbang, and in fact I believe it's on the point where the landing took place, and that is frequently visited by Royal Marines and maintained by them.
Could you just repeat one more?
And as far as our own company is concerned, we became known as Limbang Company to this day, as I recall. I and my section were in the second boat, taking advantage of the agricultural implements which we had failed to unload. This craft was commanded by Lieutenant Soapy Waters, who was our troop commander. The first boat, which had the two assault troops on it, and that was commanded by Company Commander Captain Moore. And it was obviously decided at this particular stage that they were going to land.
Can you say he obviously decided?
Yes. He had obviously decided that, at all intents and purposes, they were going to land and sort the situation out. And I can see from my position, the first craft went straight into the bank near where it had been planned they should go in, which is by a small jetty, and they were getting ashore. I also could see from my position members of those troops getting hit as they indeed landed.
And can you...
The volume of fire coming towards us all seemed to be coming from an LMG, a light machine gun, from the right-hand side or the east side of the town itself. We were to find out later, having landed, that in fact there was quite a fair amount of weaponry. There were at least four LMGs, light machine guns, and had they been correctly filled, in other words, the rounds or the bullets put into the magazine in the correct way and used effectively, I doubt very much whether we would have got ashore. Other than that, the fire or the weaponry pointed at us was nearly shotguns and self-made rifles, that sort of thing. I didn't hear or see any grenades. It was nearly all small arms fire, and the main havoc being caused by this light machine gun, which I believe was an ex-policeman who fired it.
And I want to do one more thing.
Right. I remember my feeling a burning sensation in my foot, but then I lost the thought of it until much later in the day. It is because of the tightness of the boots and the wrapping of the putties that, relaxing later on in the day, I thought suddenly came back to me and realised I'd been peppered by a couple of shotgun shells or shotgun pellets.
Magnificent.
Lovely.
Yeah. On reflection, it is very difficult to say one gets hardened to death or indeed injury. If it, of course, is a very close colleague, personal friend, then one can sympathise perhaps a little bit more than if you knew them by association or indeed didn't know them, but they happen to be on your side. The one person I felt particularly sorry for was a guy, as I mentioned earlier, called Scouse Kearns, a Marine I knew very well. He was the most unluckiest person I've ever met, and you get these sort of in all walks of life. He arrived in Singapore in the May, and I think his kit arrived in the August. When he came off the aircraft, he fell and broke his arm, and in fact, he'd only just got out of plaster. And misfortune had sort of troubled him from whenever. But then, for this to happen, you know, it really is the ultimate. So, yes, I felt very, very badly about Scouse. But, yes, I suppose to a degree you get hardened, or you harden yourself. You don't, it isn't a conditioning process. It's a case of hardening yourself. Consider the feelings. Sorry. We have a very old saying in services that exercises are made to be boring so that the real thing comes as a blessed relief. And active service, whilst there is the remote possibility of attracting some reaction or response to your being there, a lot of the time is just spent in routine after routine. And it is only by sort of continuing in this particular task that the opposition sees there is no point in going on. So therefore, a lot of that wins battles rather than the actual direct attack. After the Limbang assault itself, things came back to a form of Royal Marine norm. Particular tasks, some exciting, some not so exciting. The exciting ones I remember is disturbing a hornet's nest, for instance, by tying up to it when the Tembron River was in full flood. Non-exciting is standard jungle patrols existing for 6 days on what you carried, all to no avail. Or perhaps, on reflection, to good avail. You satisfied some people that all was well, that the terrorists, in fact, had left that particular area and were no longer a nuisance. We then ended up back in Brunei itself, by one means or another, nearly all by water. And it would appear that the Brunei uprising or revolt, indeed, had sort of served its purpose, or not served its purpose, but died a natural death. I can just explain just a minute. Having been hunting all these guys, they were in fact caught by other members of our company, and we were given the task on returning to Brunei of being their warders for some 4 weeks or a month in a very palatial house, which was quite pleasant. But to actually see the people that evoked all this action and whatever, one looks at them and says size, or perhaps their stature, does not become the actual revolt's worth or value. And to just look at these guys now as prisoners, if you like, awaiting whatever the end result was, one sort of looks at them and says, well, was it really worth it for all the sort of loss and everything else? All Malays are quite small of stature, and they were just dejected, very dejected, having been captured. And with all prisoners to a degree, from the moment of capture, they go through a transitional period. The fear of capture, I suppose, until then the fruitlessness of it all, until they start getting a bit cocky again and demanding their rights and who they want to see and whatever. So, It's an amusing, transitional period, just watching those, right? Throughout the whole world, obviously, one realizes that people are different the worldwide over. In the Far East, I don't think they value life quite as much as perhaps one would think about it in the Western areas. But also it goes on, people change and people's ideas change. I can reflect the difference between these Malays as prisoners to the Falkland prisoners we took, who had been fed quite a fair amount of propaganda that in fact the Royal Marines do not take prisoners, they eat them. And to see them coming down in droves to whatever their fate was, they thought was going to be, was a strange thought.
What pathetic was it?
It was initially quite pathetic. I think the word soon gets back to them that in fact we don't eat prisoners. But they had nowhere else to go. Basically speaking, they'd come to the end of the tether, and I don't mean on the strategy side of it, but they were freezing cold, had nothing to eat, and they were just prepared to accept whatever was going to be their fate. Anger, to me, is an emotion which is a luxury. A lot of people have it and cannot control it, and other people control it very well indeed. If you're in a particular task of aggression, you cannot afford the luck because it tempers your judgment, and therefore you can't do it. And this happens a lot, I feel, with the youth of today. Since I've been in civilian life, I perhaps get more angry now, not to provocation, but more angry at what I term as waste. I see various reports, without sort of itemizing anything, but people in unison, revolting about something which they could do something about if they so wished, but all they choose to do is to sort of form a ban. I get very angry about that sort of thing. Whereas in the service, and with somebody who's firing at you, anger will not help you. It will affect your judgment. So therefore, you know, I have personally was. Northern Ireland is once again a job, and anger will not help you there. What you should do, as I saw it, was a clearly defined role which you have to do. I'm not saying that one shouldn't compromise a little bit, but that is certainly a luxury, really.
Very good.